Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Bald Move Television. We're the officially unofficial podcast for all of television. And, of course, it's Wednesday, which means this podcast is being run as a bawdy and disorderly house because we're going to talk about harlots in the latest episode here in season three.
Well, fuck me to America and back.
Charlotte Wells is back. Or no.
No, Margaret.
Margaret Wells is back. Charlotte Wells,
She's not so much back.
Yeah. I had so much fun watching this episode until the very last second, and I had so many kind of fun jokes and skits and stuff I wanted to do, and now I'm just... Jessica Brown Finley is the Sean Bean of season threes.
Yeah, the show's getting a little too much Game of Thrones for my taste.
Yeah. You got Theon Greyjoy. I hate this, but not because I think it's bad or because I think the show's bad. It's like I love Jessica Brown Finley. I really like Charlotte Wells. It's very difficult to imagine harlots without her.
Yeah, it has a lot of greater implications about what's going to happen with the rest of the story, because I think Charlotte is our biggest tie-in to Lady Fitz. Like, what?
Sure.
What kind of thread or connection do we have to Lady Fitz outside of her? I know she has her own story going on, but it mainly focuses on the Wells girls, right? And I don't know why this love story, and I wouldn't even call it love, just this lust story needed to happen between her and Hal Pincher. I didn't buy
Isaac
that
Pincher.
At all.
Isaac.
Okay. I didn't buy that at all. Why they would continue to do that. And what their attraction was to each other. But, you know, she says that it wasn't anything that's explainable. It's just physical. So you take her to word at that, then yeah, it seems like a pointless death. But
yeah,
I don't know. We'll see what they... I trust the showrunners and the writers that they know what they're doing here.
Yeah, no, I mean, like, all this, this is just me, you know, we finished this episode like 15 minutes ago. This is me just still processing my own feelings as a fan about the show. And I don't want to misconstrue me saying I hate that as, again, me criticizing the show. It's just more like it's painful. I don't like it.
No, it's a symbol of loving the show that you hate it so much.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I hate it in the same way I hated The Red Wedding. You know, mm-hmm. I hate it in the same way I've hated many great deaths in television, and it was also just shocking and unexpected. There was nothing in the plot that hinted that was mortal danger. That there was mortal danger for like Lydia Quigley. Mm-hmm. There's mortal danger for Lucy because they even talked about her neck being in the noose. There's mortal danger for Margaret, who's come back from the dead from the legal standpoint of England. But for Charlotte, who seemed so secure and powerful and, you know, surrounded by her whole family, and the other thing is, I'm just so fucking mad at Margaret Wells because once again, her fucking half-cocked way of dealing with shit has blown up and hurt somebody, this time one of her daughters. And
she's still not going to learn anything, I think. She's still just set in her ways, and
no,
she
just...
will only be able to understand what things affect her directly.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of who else you could kill that would affect so many characters, because you've got like Isaac and Hal. Like this is obviously going to be
Lucy.
Probably a major rift in a relationship. There's going to be Lucy affected. There's
exactly.
Going to be obviously Margaret and William North. There's going to be
right,
Lady Fitz.
Charlotte owned Margaret's body house.
Right.
So who's going to own it now? I don't think it's William North. I don't think he's interested in doing that.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure who else could or would. It's a house in disrepair. I guess Nancy, but still,
yeah.
That's not an answer, I guess, but it's frustrating.
Yeah.
But, who could have seen that coming?
I mean, you. You were like,
no, I mean,
this is the weirdest thing, like one of the weirdest things I've ever seen. Like 5 minutes before it happens, you're like, I don't like to look at a staircase. I think they're going to throw Charlotte over. And I'm like, they're not going to fucking throw Charlotte over in this crowded party.
I didn't want it either. I knew it was coming, though.
I didn't see the accidental like shove and like her just being, top heavy with all of the brassiere and,
right.
And the bustle and stuff that they're rocking.
Well, I thought for sure that he was going to kill her. I thought he was going to kill her on purpose.
Yeah.
Because the last time his brother asked him to take care of something, he ended up setting their house on fire.
Yeah, so that's the other thing. What
he
the
said,
hell?
Take care of it, and he went off with this resolute look on his face.
Just
like
to go
he
fuck
just,
her?
No, I thought he went off to kill her.
I know,
but
like,
him fucking her was the surprise.
That's what I'm saying. Like, what was he planning on doing? Like,
taking care of it was just to,
was
like,
just
kiss her and distract her?
Like,
yeah.
I mean, but everyone there, I mean, that was what I thought was going to be the fun part. That, like, everyone... You had this crazy train collision course at this boxing thing that you
right.
started realizing, oh my God, literally everyone's going to be here.
But the wild thing is that, yeah, she had no idea about this deal. And Charlotte would have probably tried to block it as well if she knew it was happening with her mother in the pinchers. But it didn't have anything to do with her. It had nothing to do with... Well, I guess it did have something to do with Margaret. But those things overlap in a way that tells me that Charlotte shouldn't have died for what happened.
Yeah, man, and like I said, this is such a really fun episode of reunions and getting to see everybody react to the undead Margaret Wells, the muff pistol jokes, like everything was just so much fun. And
so let's just talk about the episode.
Okay, let's start with the return of Lydia Quigley. Okay. I'm not sure what she was doing with her haunted ghost routine outside of the Wells residence.
I suspect. Uh-huh. Based on some of her actions throughout this episode, that she has been institutionalized and that has had some sort of effect on her mental state.
So you think she actually is cracked up just a little bit?
Just a little bit. I mean, how could you not from what she's gone through?
Yeah, no, you're
and
not
she
wrong about that.
Also was kind of a terrible person to begin with.
Kind of, yeah.
So if you consider that, I mean, she has some actions throughout this episode that make you believe that she's kind of cracking up a little bit, like walking Kate into the ring right before the boxing match. Like, how ill-advised is that?
And just
you've only got one person you knew would be interested, and it came off as pathetic.
I
he
also,
even tried to assault her at the cake table or whatever,
yeah,
the macaroon table.
I didn't understand, like, her trying to jam herself into high society, going to these gentlemen's clubs and auctioning off this woman's, you know, maidenhead or whatever, the former Mrs. Bottomley, the new Miss Quigley. I felt like she should have been shunned more somehow. Like, they're like, look at all the problems Lady Fitz is having. I guess that's the thing. She went to gentlemen's club to sell sex. And they're like, this isn't like, she didn't try to go to their private homes, but...
One of the main attractions was the courtesan, Charlotte Wells.
Yeah.
So nobody went in with their eyes closed, except for maybe the people who were not heteronormative.
What do you think? So the whole episode I thought that Lydia Quigley was planning on selling Kate to the Spartans because, and then like everything seemed to fit in place. So she's like, you know, my dear, when the time is right, we'll sell you for a small fortune. And I'm like,
it's not out of the cards.
Because like virginity, like we see the Wells girls went for £100, a couple £100. That's not a fortune. That's a lot of money. That's like getting like $20,000 or so, but it's not a fortune. And
I think it's
a
fortune for a virginity that doesn't exist. Also, virginity is a construct.
Sure. Granted, on all accounts. But I'm saying, like, I think that they were hinting, and then, like, when her family wrote her own obituary, I'm like, holy shit, this is the perfect lamb to deliver for the slaughter. But
I think
then,
she's still going to try.
I don't know, because I feel like when she...
Because she meets the Marquess of Blaine.
Yes, but she also rejected him hard, which I wasn't quite sure that what kind of power play. I mean, I think that's... I don't know what kind of power play. I've got some speculation, but I think that maybe what saved Kate is the fact that she wanted to be called Quigley, and this is like suddenly Lydia's got this opportunity to recapture what she clearly wanted, which was the daughter... You know, Charlotte, she craved that to replace, you know, the idiot son and her affections. And now she's got this woman who, like, maybe between her being a touch mad and maybe a touch sentimental and the fact that, yeah, I don't know. I feel like by the end of the episode, I was kind of off the selling her to the Spartans thing. Or if she does get sold to the Spartans, it's going to be as like a tragedy. because like Miss May plays hardball with her, or it's like, I absolutely think she would do that rather than go back to like Bedlam or obviously go to jail or like, so, but it's not going to be like her just being conniving and getting ahead. It's going to be something that's more tragic.
That's fair. I think that the Spartans are very much still in play because they wouldn't have had Lord, is it Lord Fallon? Was that
Marcus
last season?
Blaine, you mean?
No, I'm talking about Lord Fallon, the guy who killed himself. Why would they do that unless they were going to do something larger with that? Marquess of Blaine was on vacation. He came back with a pregnant woman, or the woman that he poached from.
Was she pregnant? I didn't notice that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Lydia quickly noticed it. But he's also quick to turn her aside. I think that's very much still in play, as if her denying his initial offer for her virginity was maybe her signaling to him that she's got larger designs on the future.
Yeah.
So if, I mean, we'll sell it to someone else, but for you, comes at a much higher price.
Well, that's also my theory, is that like she's trying to split the difference between being too open and too like, hey, I'm back, I'm out of Bedlam, isn't that crazy and pathetic? And also like her doing this power play with Blaine being like, I'm not, you know, I might be reduced, but I'm not desperate. And also I can still deliver the goods if I have to.
I also love that Lydia Quigley made this big escape from Bedlam with another woman that is sort of high profile. And she is not as wanted as Margaret Wells right now,
mm-hmm.
because Lydia Quigley could just show up anywhere as Lydia Quigley. In fact, here's another Quigley. No questions asked, right? Also, Charles Quigley on the run from being sent to the debtor's house.
Right.
And the Quigleys are just cool.
I don't understand why they couldn't, because she's escaped from Bedlam. Like, why couldn't they call the madhouse and be like, yeah, we found your nutter. She's pretending to be high society, and she's with another one of her fellow mad women, and they just get carted back to Bedlam.
Exactly. I agree. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah,
there's no reason why they shouldn't all be accepted or rejected.
Yeah.
Together. Why can't Margaret show up at the same party that Lydia Quigley is if everyone's as accepting of fugitives?
Well, I mean, they're different from being, I guess, an escaped mental patient and also being, like, you were condemned to death by the law. Like, there's a little bit different of jeopardy, but not, you know, like,
is
Quigley afraid to go to, like, is she not afraid to go to Bedlam? I don't understand why that's not as a menace or,
right.
I don't know. So, speaking of Margaret Wells, do you want to talk about her?
Yes, let's do it.
She
got married.
Harloted her way back to America, and everyone
in England.
Back to England, you're right. With this,
she did harlot her way into America too.
It's just true. She harlots in her way. She doesn't need a passport. She's just a bawd. But she's with this Jonas Young character, who we found out is also an indentured servant, and her whole family. Like she showed up, and she's like, oh, looks like. You know, I forget the word she said, her daughter said, like, what a rube or a mark he is. But you can tell, like, in her reactions that I think she's got genuine feelings for Jonas Young. And it was very apparent when she was talking to Nancy that, like, not only is she intrigued by the man's disposition and spirit, but also he's surprising in the sack. So, like... but she also clearly loves William. Like when they rejoiced and held on to each other and was laughing, and it felt really good. And then her seeing, you know, Jacob and Lucy and Charlotte, that's all really, that was all great. I love her meeting Emily Lacey and her saying, you're still the conniving cat. She's like, I've got nothing on you, Miss Wells. You've got more tricks than a sorcerer.
Yeah. It's unfortunate, because I was really tense in these scenes thinking that she wasn't going to tell William North about her new husband,
mm-hmm.
or that she was married at all, but she did. And they played it off really casually. Like, I played these tricks on this man, and then do cue Margaret Wells laugh.
Right, right.
Which I can't do. But also, she hasn't told the other guy. And then they meet each other later at the boxing ring, and they don't know about each other, don't know that they're meeting
who
they're meeting.
Seem like they're hitting it off.
Right. And I love William North, but also I'm kind of liking Jonas Young.
There's nothing that Jonas Young's done that makes me think that he seems like a cool dude. He's got a great beard.
And there's nothing he needs to do. It's just William North was there, and she promised him she wouldn't get married again.
Yeah.
She promised William North that she wouldn't marry, and she did, and it's
well, that's
hard.
The thing. That's the forgivable thing. It's more like that she's actually in love with this man that is the tough
right.
one. I almost wonder if they're heading towards some kind of, like, poly-type relationship.
No.
Man, this show, this show loves to do that. Like, you know, that absolutely was going on at this time. It just wasn't talked about publicly. There's no way there wasn't, like, some kind of weird triad in London.
Right.
As
well,
fucking perverted as this town is being portrayed.
Well, to add to, let's call this a.
Sorry, not that the poly people are necessarily perverted or degenerate or no more so than I. Wink.
This love triangle turns into a love square when you get Nancy involved.
Yeah, but that's the thing. Nancy's kind of made peace with the fact that, like, that's just Margaret doesn't love her that way. You know.
No, I get it, but she also. I mean, arguably, Nancy's the one that actually set these events in motion by going to see Margaret during the boxing match.
Oh, yeah, for
sure. And telling her everything.
Mm. Well, but
and then
Margaret
that,
tried.
And
everyone,
then helping Margaret get in.
Yeah, but that's because she can't say no to Margaret. But she did try. Everyone tried to keep the truth from Charlotte, just that they told the wrong lie. Oh, I thought it was a candle. Oh, is that coal that kicked over a candle?
Margaret, keep calling her Charlotte.
Do I? I'm sorry.
I just want to clarify for the audience.
There's also, I guess, man, because there's this brutal line from Charlotte where she got with Margaret and said, she was joking. Well, she just said that, oh, so you ran off to America with an Irishman. She goes, you know, I was going to do that once. It seems like you're living my life while I'm stuck in Greek Street living yours. And I'm like, that was fucking brutal.
Laying down some smack.
And that's the last thing she ever said. So there's no way Margaret Wells is not going to go scorched earth against, and she's not going to have, she's not going to know all the information. And also William North is primed to go like fucking nuclear warhead too.
Yeah. Okay. Let's leave that until the end.
Okay.
Because I got a lot of thoughts on that.
All right.
One quick thought. Do you have a muff pistol?
I don't have a muff pistol. I thought...
Well, I have a muff pistol that you gave me, and I will treasure in my muff forever.
I thought that was... And I'm like, what the hell could that be? And then
we have to look it up to see if muff was a common term.
So muff is, of course, a hand warmer. It's like those furry pockets that women can put their hands in.
So
I like the idea... I like the idea of these ladies carrying a pistol in there for, you know, for ne'er-do-wells.
Protection.
But also, I looked up the etymology, and muff was a common slang for a vagina as early as the late 1600s, early 1700s. So
right.
It checks out. And I love, like, Emily Lacey, like, cracking, losing her shit when she said, I'll treasure it in my muff always.
So Margaret had to have known exactly what she was saying when she said that, and the kind of reaction she would get from Emily Lacey.
Yeah.
Like, there's not a better way to phrase that, as Archer would say, phrasing.
Yeah, she also knew her husband was cool with it, because when Emily Lacey started laying on about, like, you can appreciate this, I can grasp size, you'll find, and he's like, oh, you remind me of my wife. So, like,
that's fair.
So it felt like it was a private joke between the two harlots when they...
Maybe they thought that Hal and Isaac weren't as clever because...
I buy that.
Because Margaret also tried to prod them to see what kind of entertainment and company they'd be providing at their taverns. Mm-hmm. So
yeah.
I think they were playing it coy. She was playing it even more coy.
But no, I think Hal and Isaac are... daring and ambitious and enterprising, but bright, not really.
Do you want to talk any more at all about Isaac and Charlotte's relationship?
That's the thing. It was baffling. And then I'm like, oh, well, the show's at least acknowledging that Charlotte's like, this is stupid. It makes no sense. But, like, it's this raw physical connection. And I'm like, okay, fair enough. And now she's dead, and it's clearly going to... It's going to be something those boys are going to have to work through if they can survive the wrath of the Wells and the Norths and the Luce or the Lady Fitzes, and then everybody else is going to be coming gunning for them.
Yeah, I will say that their relationship, their secret relationship, started off as being a kind of it speaks to the fast paced nature of this show that. Immediately, Emily Lacey sees them leaving together some courtyard, and it ultimately doesn't matter
right.
that she saw them doing it.
Well, I mean, she's always wanted to. I think she doesn't like Isaac because she thinks Isaac is always tearing her down in front of Hall, and she wants to be taken seriously as a businesswoman.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I'm just saying, us as the audience, we see Emily Lacey seeing them, and mm-hmm. we have our hopes set very high about what's going to happen. This is going to be some sort of, is this going to be the string throughout the season that mm-hmm. we're going to follow along and see how this unfolds? Nope, it happens very quickly.
String cut.
So do you want to talk about what the Molly house is doing?
Yeah, let's talk about Elizabeth and Lucy.
And Fredo.
There's a lot. Elizabeth seems like she's playing a very dangerous game.
With a lot of dangerous people.
Yeah, we found out that her backers, her mysterious benefactors, is Miss May. And saying, you need to pay me back in cash or I'll break your legs. She's got the silk. Was it this guy's name Khan? Why do I think his last name is Khan?
I think it's Khan.
Okay. You got the silk manufacturer, provider, silk pirate.
Silk pirate.
She shows up
it.
This boxing match, and she's trying to pull a long con on him for funding, I think. But she's also using her sexuality, because that's what appeals to him about her. And she just nakedly flirts with William North in front of him, almost pisses him off.
Does piss him off,
and she's able to mollify him. But, like, holy shit, she has got so many irons in the fire, I don't know how she's not going to get burnt.
Right, she's got so many irons in the fire that it seems bizarre she has time to flirt with William North for what doesn't seem like an advantageous relationship to her at all.
It just seems like it's all just lust, because William doesn't have the kind of money she needs, for sure.
I mean, I'm hot for William North myself.
Fuck yeah.
But they're repeating the Harriet storyline, and that one just seemed problematic, for lack of a better word. Hmm. Like, Harriet is a... I think Harriet is a very interesting character. She's got a lot to motivate her, mm-hmm. her children especially. And she just seemed like she was trying to break up Margaret and North's, not marriage, but their relationship before.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
But Elizabeth has no reason to be doing this when she's got such a rich benefactor and supplier of her house's entire purpose, and that is tailoring in her hands and her grasp.
Maybe she's lonely. Like, she's using different people, and she has alliances with people, but she doesn't have a real equal partner. And, you know, William North, if you're a bawd, he has got a lot of qualities that he's dependable and he's strong and
she just
he's
give
tolerant.
Him a great jacket.
She does give
That's
great
an
jacket.
Incredibly tailored jacket.
William looked the fucking boss in it too.
Mm-hmm.
He looked like a master of ceremonies indeed.
Mm-hmm.
What do you make of what's going on between Fredo and Mr. Croft?
I don't know why Fredo would immediately fall in love so hard.
Mm-hmm.
And I also don't know why Fredo has such a bad haircut.
It's like business up front, party in the back, and
party in the lower back.
ne'er the two shall meet. You're right, because, like, they made him out to be like this very sophisticated, cool customer that knows the score. But they're also, I feel like they expect me to know who Mr. Croft is, almost like, and maybe this is true. And if it is, write in tv@baldmove.com. But, like, has Mr. Croft been like identified as some kind of John Locke Enlightenment? Liberal that is talking about breaking down class barriers, and maybe, hey, why do we hate people that commit sodomy, and maybe we could live openly? Because I could see that being very attractive to a gay man in this time period, but, like, I haven't seen that with Mr. Croft, but they asserted it, because he said, like, you know, he just said, like, I really like this guy, I really like the way he thinks, and that he thinks that we can change things, and, you know, Elizabeth dismisses that, but, like, I think that's why they're infatuated, but I think he thinks Mr. Croft is more of a libertine than he is, because obviously Mr. Croft appreciated being saved by Lucy at the boxing match.
But also, Lucy does this low-key blackmail of him, where she says, I love reading about myself in the papers, and he gives her an extra coin for her discretion.
And
she also says,
seen you talk, and I've seen you speak.
Yeah, so I don't know what he's talking about. Maybe more libertine values, but why would he be... Well, I guess I know why he would be so discreet about being gay.
Yeah. Oh, of course. I looked up Mr. Croft in that time period to see, because I know there are some, I think, actual real life historical figures, you know, all the ladies on the list, but I wasn't able to find anything, so I don't know.
We'll find out, I'm sure, because this is our new main character.
Yeah. And this all leads up as a glorious train wreck to the boxing match, which I thought was a lot of fun. Lady Fitz has decided that since she's a lady and she's come out with all of her scandals, except for the scandals that she hasn't come out with, that she can... She's immune. Like
she can just host a fight at her house.
She's host a legal back alley fight in her own house. She gets this painting, the sapphic painting that's sent from her brother that she interprets as a warning, which is interesting because now that scandal has just gone away. I mean, that's the one bright lining of Charlotte dying, is that Lady Fitz has one less scandal to contend
with. Well, until
her
daughter comes back, I guess. If her daughter comes back pregnant, then new scandal.
Yeah, true. And I wonder, I just wonder what's going to happen between her and her brother and why her brother has been kind of tolerating her doing this crazy stuff anyway. I mean, the boxing match just looked like it was going to be so much fun because everybody's on a collision course and there's so many people that shouldn't know about other people and there's all these social faux pas and kind of things happening and everyone's angling for different things, and then, you know, you called it, over the rail Charlotte went, and as soon as she hit, because like I'm like, and I saw her laying the way she is, I'm like, this is at this
time anytime
period,
you see a character with their foot back in a certain way, like it's not just a broken
she
leg,
had both of her
dead.
Shoes on though.
Both of her shoes on, so that's good.
But yeah, I'm like, that's like a three-story fall on the marble, and this is the 17th century. There is no spinal surgeon that's going to be able to take her and put her back together.
These massive dresses are not even thick enough to save you from that.
No, I thought maybe she'd spread
Lady
her
Fitz
legs and she'd
thick
float down
to
like
that.
Like Mary Poppins and her voluminous parachute-like pantaloons, but... No, it's a real bummer. It completely changed the emotional feelings I had for the episode.
Yeah. The boxing match itself was bizarre.
Yeah.
Because they showed a lot of just cutscenes waist down of Jack Lively mostly getting his ass kicked. But then they came back and he was kind of winning a little bit. I thought that was kind of poorly handled or...
Yeah, whoever directed this episode, and I didn't see, like, I don't think they had much inclination to shoot action because I think they were telling the story of Lively, is that his name?
Yeah, Jack Lively.
Jack the Lad Lively, like doing a rope-a-dope on this other guy.
It's his big comeback.
Yeah, letting him kind of wear himself out and be overconfident with his size and kind of, but up until the end, and when he started, like, you know, suddenly he's just landed a couple punches and the other guy was on his knees and then he's done. I found it hard just to follow the fight from what we were shown. But what does this mean to William now? Like, he's got his champion, but he's lost his daughter. Like, I don't know. They had all these fun plots, and then they throw a death into it. Do you think Jessica? Because that's why she got written out of Downton Abbey, is because she wanted out of her contract.
You know that for a fact?
Yes.
Okay.
Do you have any inside knowledge about, like, is she got another show in the wings or what's up? Because
I did
it seems so brutal
that she has another show in the works that's based off a book series that she was written out for, but I wasn't sure of any confirmation on that.
Okay.
But man. I don't like it. I feel like if I can work two jobs, so can she, right?
Yeah.
It doesn't seem fair, personally, to me, Jessica Brown Findlay, and I'm speaking to you as the actress in person, that you would do this to us.
Yeah.
Bald move.
Yeah.
Personally.
Because that was the other thing.
This is an attack.
Like,
and we're not going to stand for it, and we're going to burn your house down.
Arsonist. We're nothing as low as an arsonist, apparently. No, because like that's the thing is like... God damn it, Downton Abbey, that's the same thing. It's like you just wanted, that's such a fun show, and they kept on like killing Matthew, and then they killed Lady Sybil, and
killed,
you know,
Lady Sybil. When? When did they kill her?
In season three.
Season three?
Yeah.
So
I had,
whatever
I
new
had to
show
look
she's
to make
going
sure
to, she'll die in season three there too.
It wasn't season three, episode three, because I'm like, wouldn't that be weird? But
season three, episode five, I think.
I mean, lots of people
so
have
close enough.
Lots of people have died in harlots, but it's been like, you know, side characters and characters that like you only cared about because they moved the plot forward. And this is just a real shock and surprise. I'm really interested to see what everybody thinks about it. What else do we have to talk about?
I think that's all we've got. Do we want to talk about the future of harlots and Bold Move coverage? You want to talk about that at all?
In what capacity?
Just that we have screeners and...
Yes, I'm thinking about I was thinking about that, and I don't know that I want to like boast on the show that we've got screeners now.
Why? It gives us a certain amount of prestige, and also we can tell people to expect it on their... maybe on their car ride into work on Wednesday morning instead of at midnight or whenever, or then a Thursday morning. That was my only thought.
let's see how it shakes out, and then next week we can always, like, if we drop it like at the date, like, you know, at midnight on Wednesday, then we can always talk about it there.
Okay.
Boy, I like I said, I gotta go pour myself a stiff drink. I should have had one before the podcast.
Yeah, this was a great episode right until the very final.
And it really
minutes.
I have no idea what's good. Anything could happen from this point in the season. Like,
I
kind of had
like
an idea.
I say that every episode, but also for real this time.
Yeah, I thought that the season was kind of rounding into some kind of shape, and then like the fact that Margaret came back, and like when I stopped looking
titties.
For her. Yeah. When I kind of stopped looking for her, she shows back up. I'm like, well, that's the big surprise of the episode, but not even close. Mm-hmm. So, boy, we'll have to see what happens on the next episode of Harlots. If you've got feedback and you want to send it, you can do so at tv@baldmove.com. Of course, we'll be back later on this week we're going to be wrapping up Los Spookies. We're going to be talking about the stuff that came out of San Diego Comic-Con, because there's a ton of fun trailers and cool things that I should sound more excited about, but I'm just really bummed about Charlotte, y'all. And that'll be it for Hulu's Harlots until next week. Until then, I'm your host, Aaron.
And I'm Cecily.
See ya.